The Jericho Network on Westwood One.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the Pot of Thunder and Rock and Roll, and today, the hilarious Paul Scheer is going to be here. Actor, comedian, my buddy from I Love the 80s, 90s, those pop culture shows on VH1. He's also the host of one of the best podcasts out there, How Did This Get Made? It's a podcast talking about really bad movies. How did they get made? We're going to give you a real behind-the-scenes look at what it's like to make this podcast, what it was like to film the VH1 I Love the 80s specials. You'll be surprised. You'll laugh. You'll cry. You'll be hilariously entertained. Paul's obviously been big into pop culture, podcasts all about bad movies, so of course we're going to go there. Lots of good stuff on Back to the Future, the Star Wars franchise, Indiana Jones, James Bond, and the Marvel movies. Paul also tried out for SNL a few times. He's going to share what that process was like, and the one thing he regrets saying to Lorne Michaels. We're also going to get in-depth about Different Strokes. That's right. What other podcast can you go in depth about? Different strokes it takes. Different strokes it takes. Different strokes rule the world. Yeah, Paul's got a lot of great stories. You're going to hear all of them. But first, I got to take care of the two most important parts of this podcast, you guys, and of course, my amazing sponsors. That's right. If you didn't support all the great Talk is Jericho sponsors, I wouldn't be able to do this for you for free for twice a week, all right? So thanks, first of all, to Diamond Dallas Page and DDP Yoga. All right, you know how much I dig DDP Yoga, especially the new DDP Yoga Now app. It's been my mission to get all of you, every single one, even you, Fat Frank in Peoria, you know what I'm talking to you. I got to get you doing DDP Yoga. Because of how much the great stuff the program is, how much it's helped me, how much it's done for my career. You know it saved my pro wrestling career. You know it saved my singing career. You know it saved my quality of life. DDP Yoga also saved Jake the Snake Roberts' life. And you can see for yourself in the Resurrection of Jake the Snake, the documentary that Dallas and his crew put together. Believe me, this is not a wrestling documentary. It's a amazing, heartwarming, riveting story, personal story, about how Jake the Snake beat his demons, battled back from the brink of death to reclaim his life and his family. Such a great story. So many people checking out and digging it. It's now the sixth highest rated documentary of all time on Netflix. Let me say that again. The sixth highest rated documentary of all time on Netflix. How many documentaries on Netflix? 5, 10, 15, 20, 1,000? This is the sixth highest rated. That means everybody that's seen it has loved The Resurrection of Jake the Snake. I know I love it. I just rewatched it. You need to go rewatch it. If you haven't seen it, then go watch it. Be sure to rate it after you watch it. Netflix, Netflix and chill. That's the thing. Go Netflix and chill with The Resurrection of Jake the Snake. But I'm telling you this, it ain't no happy story. It's very, very, like I said, it's sad, it's heartbreaking, but at the end, it's very happy, and it's very, very worthwhile watching. One of the best documentaries I've ever seen in my life. This documentary will take you on a roller coaster ride of emotions. It'll leave you feeling inspired and ready to take on the world at the end, just like DDP helped Jake the Snake do. Once you're fired up to change your own life after you've watched The Resurrection of Jake the Snake's life, take advantage of this amazing offer that Dallas is giving to you, the Sexy Beast. Talk is Jericho listeners, 20% off anything you purchase at ddpyoga.com/Jericho for a limited time. 20% off DDP Yoga, 20% off the collector's edition of The Resurrection of Jake the Snake documentary, 20% off anything at ddpyoga.com/Jericho. That is a huge bargain for you. Take advantage of this offer. Change your life. Change your physical state, your mental state. Start today. DDP Yoga will be the best physical fitness program you've ever done in your life, and you can do it right now. Get started. ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Change your life and do it today.
What up? Hey, this is Conan. Hear what some of my friends and respected colleagues have to say about my new podcast, Keeping It 100. Boom.
Hey, this is the Disco Inferno, Glenn Gilberti. I hope he brings you on sometime. I will absolutely bury him.
Montel Vontavious Porter, MVP, Keeping It 100 with Conan. It's the definitive cure for insomnia. You can call it audio ambient.
This is Violent J from Insane Clown Posse. What's all this hype about Keeping It 100? He stole his entire swag from us. We should have this damn show.
Hey, yo, say hello to the bad guy, Scott Hall.
Jericho, you must be really desperate for content to put this JoJo on your network. Conan couldn't be a star if he was thrown by a ninja.
Hello, everybody. This is Vince Russo.
How long is Conan going to last, especially if his boss, Chris Jericho, decides to drug test him?
Tangana, this is Spanish announcer Hugo Savinovich. Conan with his own show? Peligro, peligro, it's dangerous!
Talk is Jericho.
All right, so we're here like this beautiful Hollywood office with Paul Scheer. You're actually looking at the 101 out here.
The beautiful 101. I can see the Harry Potter theme park at Universal. A lot of exciting stuff here. I mean, most offices don't have a view into downtown. What do they call the Harry Potter land? It's
downtown Dumbledore or something, whatever it is, right?
We talked about earlier that, you know, I've seen your face for years from we did the VH1's
Best Week Ever. Yeah, Best Week Ever.
And I love the 70s, 80s, 90s, whatever. So finally getting to meet face to face.
People don't realize that those shows, we didn't really interact that much because you would go into a really small office, or at least my experience was this in New York. You would go into somebody's office where there are people working in every cubicle around.
Yeah.
The door would close and like, we're taping in here. And then the people next door would be like, hey, shut up. We're working. Like in LA, it was a little bit better. LA, they had like a studio. In New York, we were just in people's
basically
offices.
Basically cubicles. I remember there was, there was like blankets put up on the wall.
Yes.
So you either keep the light out or the sound or whatever. High-class production.
Very high-class. VH1 just taking all that money. Like, I mean, good for them. They figured out how to do it. But it was so funny. It was like, this is the big time. But we never saw each other because we would just kind of slip in and out. Like, you get done, and then by the time you were leaving, someone else was walking in.
Right,
you might
see someone in the hallways. But there's a bunch of guys like you, Ian Michael Black. Ian Black, sorry.
Michael Ian Black, Doug Benson.
Benson.
Yeah.
I feel like I know him. I've never met him.
Eli Roth did the show, you know, director. There's been so many people, but it was I always remember it like the way that you exit a public bathroom. If someone's waiting outside that door, you don't make eye contact. You just kind of go out of the door and you walk. You walk strong and you purposefully out.
That's
so
right.
Like, you're just like,
you
on to the next
to
thing.
Know what's been going
exactly.
on in there, right?
You don't want to be blamed for it. You don't want to have eye contact. You can't explain it.
But you were right, though. They really tapped into something there because I walk into your office here and there's a Venkman doll. There's a tot. Candle thing.
Yeah.
You got Rhinestone soundtrack over in the corner. You are a pop culture aficionado.
I mean, I certainly love all things of pop culture. I'm a big, like, I just like it all. I mean, you know, I don't know if that's, you know, the age in which I grew up, there was more stuff, but I feel like we're probably right at the end of that, like, disposable culture. Now I feel like, I don't think that there are shows or things that are going to exist as strongly as we had them, I feel like.
Why do you say that?
I don't know. I feel like more people are watching one thing. Like, you know, like for me, it was like everyone watched The Cosby Show, you know, I mean, and Bill Cosby, whatever right now. But like, you know, now it's like kids are watching them. You know, you can be watching stuff on Netflix. You can be watching stuff on cable. Like, just there's a proliferation of just media that I feel like there's no connection to it. Like, I was like, I have to watch this because there's no other option. There's no DVR. It's like, I'm coming home. I'm watching Facts of Life, Different Strokes every single day.
Yeah.
Happy Days reruns until I get to the night. And it was like, you know, if I had a choice, I wouldn't be watching any of that stuff. I watched the same copy of Empire Strikes Back about a zillion times.
Now, it seems like you and I are probably the same age group. Like, I'm 44.
Yeah, so I'm a little bit younger than that. Yeah, okay. I'm 39 right now.
But that's what I'm saying. So you're talking, when you mentioned the Facts of Life, Different Strokes, that was exactly, I come home from school, that's what's on.
Yeah.
And then there might be some Taxi in there.
Oh, yeah, you watch some Taxi.
Happy
Nick,
Days.
Yeah. Old SNLs that were like cut down to half an hour on Nick at Night or whatever Nick was when it wasn't like, Pinwheel or whatever it was. But yeah, it was, but I feel like that was, I mean, there was just no real options or choices. So you just, you know, I think you're connected. And you're connected more to that stuff. It makes me feel old, but it's like at the same time, I feel like that's why I feel like it won't be there for kids like that are now growing up, because it's just so quick and there's internet and there's everything. It's like you're not forced to watch something. I think a lot of
so
the things.
Many options, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we probably watch Indiana Jones and Star Wars a million times just because there was no real other options. Like, you know, it was like, that's it. I bought that Temple of Doom, you know, VHS for $19.99. It was like the supermarket. It was the coolest thing, that and Home Alone. Like, I was like, yeah, I'm going to watch this over and over.
I remember waiting in line to see Temple of Doom.
Oh, wow.
When it came out, and you got a poster with it.
Oh,
a free poster. That was the big gimmick at the time. But you get a free poster if you wait in line to show up.
I remember they used to have these books in the movie theater, like where you buy candy. And it would be like a commemorative books. And when I saw Return of the Jedi, it was like, you could just read about it and look at black and white stills and color photography.
Like Premiere magazine or something.
But was it a free? This was just for the movie specifically. You would buy it. So like, I have a handful of them. They're like, I have one for a Muppet movie, Muppets Take Manhattan, and one for Return of the Jedi. And it was just sort of like a 4 or 5 page, like it was basically just like a press release, but a bunch of pictures. So you could kind of revisit the movie in your memory. Like, oh yeah, that was cool. Yeah, they were on Jabba's Palace. Yeah.
The stills and all the cool stuff.
Exactly.
There.
Yeah. Did you go to
a lot of movies when you were a kid?
Oh yeah. I mean, that was my big, I love movies. And my parents are divorced. So, that was it. Like, I would love to go to movies. One of the sites of my most embarrassing movie-going experiences was in high school. I would go to movies by myself. And I think, as an adult, I'm not embarrassed to go see a movie by myself. I see it all the time. But as a kid, I was like, I'm also not embarrassed. But I went to go see Major League 3, the classic of all the major leagues. And Back to Basics, I believe.
There always had to be a little tagline.
Yeah, it had to be
back on the mound.
And I went and I bumped into this girl that I really liked. And she was there with this, I'm sure, the guy that she was dating. And they both are like, hey, what are you doing here? And I'm like, oh, I'm seeing this movie. Like, well, who with? And I was like, no one. And I just felt like the biggest loser. I was like, oh, but by choice.
Yeah, by choice, honestly.
I was like, I thought it was cool to be able to, like, I had a little bit of, like, you know, curfew freedom that I'd be like, as long as I'm home by 9, I can do whatever I want. I had a car at that point or whatever it
was. Were you an only child?
Yeah.
Me too.
So, okay, yeah.
So then it's okay. Like, I think that's the best way to grow up because I'm never alone. I never have a problem of doing stuff by myself.
Exactly, yeah, because you were used to that kind of thing. I love it, as a matter of fact.
I remember I went to see Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan.
Oh, yeah.
And there was the high school, well, actually junior high school bully. It was this guy called Chuck Fontaine.
Okay.
If you're listening, Fontaine, if I ever see you, I'm going to turn around and run screaming.
By the way,
you.
Chuck Fontaine is the best bully name I've ever heard. Chuck Fontaine.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, that's a great name.
So he happened to be sitting a couple rows behind me, and I remember if I was by myself, but when Spock died, there were some tears. I was crying.
You have to. You're not human if you don't.
Now, the next day, try having the nickname "You cried when Spock died" for the next 3 or 4 years.
That.
No matter what you were doing, you could be the coolest.
You cried when Spock died.
I'm like, but it's Spock. But that's you have no soul.
Oh, that's amazing. That's like such a specific and beautifully, like, it cuts you down in so many ways. A, that you cried. B, that you're watching Star Trek. It's a perfect, like, way to go, Chuck Fontaine. You did it.
But had fate stepped in, and maybe if I was sitting a couple rows behind Chuck, maybe I would have seen him cry.
Yeah.
But then I couldn't have got it over, though, because he was still the bully. You know, I could have said he cried, and he would have punched me, and that would have been it, right?
One of the best moves I ever made on my own bully in school was he was behind me. In class, like, you'd be in these long rows. And he said something in class that was kind of like a... whatever, dicky bully thing, and it was in the middle of class, and you know when, if you hit an insult right in the middle of class, everyone laughs, and then you're like, I'm the piece of shit. Yeah. So, like, this kid did it, and probably one of the coolest, most karate-esque moves I've ever had, I'm facing forward, and I just, like, my torso spun around with my hand open to a slap, and I was like, whoop-bap! Just slapped him right in the face in front of everybody, and then like turn right back around, and the shock of a slap is arguably, I think, the most aggressive thing you can do to somebody sometimes. And it was like, it just shut him up, and he never bothered me again, because it was like, that insult was one thing, but it was like, that insult came out, I turned around, and it was like, just right across the face, didn't say a word, back to class. I don't even think I got in trouble.
It's the cheapest move. If someone ever slaps you, you have to do something.
Oh, yeah.
If you don't, you're the biggest pussy in the world.
My wife and I were at a bar one day, and we were going out to get dinner. And, the problem with bars on Sundays, in my opinion, is you don't know what you're going to get. If you show up at 6 o'clock on Sunday or 7 o'clock at a bar, you're running into people who've been there probably since noon. It's a day drunk. Everyone has that free excuse to drink on a Sunday. And which is fine. No judgment against it. But it's just a trickier proposition because you don't know what the energy you're walking into. So we're getting a drink at the bar before we went to go get food. And my wife sits down in this chair and we hear from across the room, like, "Hey, get the f*** out of my chair." And we turn and we see this guy who kind of, in no offense to Wilmer Valderrama, looks like Wilmer Valderrama.
Nothing against you, Wilmer.
Yeah, I know. I just like, but to get a visualization of what this guy looked like, he wasn't like a giant. He was just like, you know, that's what he looked like. Yeah. And he was wearing a scarf. And he was like, we turn around and he's like, get that bitch out of my chair. And I was like, oh boy. And now, again, it's early on a Sunday. It's like, I'm not in this space. And by the way, I live on the east side in L.A., and it was like one of these bars that is like, this shouldn't be happening. I'm not going to a bar where there are fights
you're
going
not in Compton
down.
Or something.
No, this is a place where they have a cauliflower sides. Like, you know, we're not like, you know, it's like, yeah, we have French fries, but it's different. It's, you know, it's not real fries, and it's not fried. And so, you know, he's like threatening the two of us. And, you know, now I don't know what to do because, and I'm sure you get in this position too, or it's a nerve-wracking position. Have you gotten into a fight when you've been older, in a real fight? Like,
yeah, it's very uncomfortable when it's brewing at this point.
Exactly. And you don't want to do, I feel like what I don't want to do is anything because it's like, I feel A, too old to be in a fight, and B, I feel like now we're at the age in our lives where you could have a lot, like, no matter what, someone can
a
sue
lawsuit
you.
Or a death.
Exactly.
Like when you're in high school in a fight, it ends, you're done.
Yes.
Now if you get in a fight when you get in your 30s, someone's getting stabbed, shot, run over.
There's something bad. Shit can go down. Like, right. And I'm always on, like, I fought a bunch in high school, but I'm in the camp of just like walk away. Who cares? Walk away. But this guy's getting like aggressive.
But they also called your wife a bitch.
I know.
That steps the line as well.
It's tricky, and it's a tricky thing because you're just in this, and your intent. You just don't know what to do, and you know, it's like you get into that Terminator mode. You're like, all right, if this is gonna go down, this is what I'm looking at here. Yeah, like, you know, what can
this,
I do?
That, do this,
exactly.
Sherlock Holmes.
Exactly. And I'm like, and I'm not, a guy who's gonna do like moves or MMA. I can't do like fucking. You know, I'm like, you know, I'm gonna probably fight dirty and hard, and like, cause that's the only way that's gonna go down for me. And I'm getting so like, you know, it's getting more and more intense, and my wife in the middle of this like back and forth just slaps this guy across the face.
The slap again.
The slap. And it just stopped everything. It like everything was like simmering. And then for my wife to hit him, like there he can't do anything.
Right.
And it just stopped. It was like he was embarrassed. I felt the whole bar heard the slap. And it just, and then he kind of just stormed out, and that was the end. And it was like the only time I was like, man, the slap sometimes can do really good wonders. I was like, it really like saved this very precarious, scary moment from escalating, you know?
But you also know, too, that girls never forget. So some point somewhere,
I
she's
know.
Like, oh, yeah? Remember that time I had to slap that guy to
I
protect
know.
Him from you? Protect you from him?
Well, we've talked about it because it's like a very crazy thing. Like, what do you do? Like, what do you do as an adult in a situation where you just don't know? Like we're in L.A. There was an epidemic here in the 90s where people were just taking guns and shooting
right.
at people out the window. It's like crazy.
How do you know what someone's going to have?
You don't know what you're walking into. Like, what craziness. Like, high school, fine. We're all pretty much on the same page,
yeah.
you know? But yeah, in real life, you don't know what insanity you could...
That's why I always loved the fighting and hockey.
Right, yeah.
Because you're fighting in hockey, and then the worst thing that happens is you fall to the ground, and the refs break you up, and it's done.
Exactly.
You're finished.
Baseball, too. Baseball becomes this, like, weird scrum. It's almost like, we were there, too. We were there,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't feel like you ever
guys
see...
Guys are jumping on the pile.
Yeah. I feel like you never see anyone walk away from a baseball fight. It's just really, like, yeah. a big wrestling, like a thing. Yeah, it's like... But yeah, it's a the slap is
that could
I advocate
work.
The slap. And then look, they made a whole TV show about it with Zach Quinto, right? The slap.
See, they knew.
Yeah, they knew. They knew the power of the slap.
Now, you mentioned earlier talking about TV shows. You mentioned that you would watch different soaps and those type of shows. What was your favorite back in those days?
Well, I remember my favorite show was I love Good Times, and I especially loved Sanford and Son.
Mm.
And Sanford and Son was banned by my parents because my parents came into my room one day and it was like almost like the way you would approach a kid with like a drug problem or something. Like, we want to talk to you. I was like, okay. And I'm young. I'm like very young, like six or five or six or seven. And you know, and they're like, we think that Sanford and Son promotes negative black stereotypes, and we don't want you to watch it. So they took away my favorite. Like, I don't know why I loved it so much. It's like, but it's like as a kid, again, it was the only option. Like, as a 5 or 6 year old, I shouldn't have any connection to Sanford and Son. I don't even know what I was like. I watched episodes later on, and it's a good show, but it's like I have no idea what the 5 year old version of that. Like, yeah, what am I getting from this? Yeah, like, yeah. I like these two people in a junkyard, and this, right. And then like this guy promising his wife is going to come to her in heaven. Like, like, you know, so
he's making death every show.
Yeah, so I mean, that was like the show that I loved that was kind of banned, but I would say. Different Strokes and Silver Spoons hold like a very high level, you know, alpha. But those are the ones I love because it just seemed like shows with kids as the leads are the best.
Always I mean, were the winner. But the thing is, I used to love Different Strokes.
Yeah.
And I still, you think to like the fates of those kids.
Yeah.
Like all of them. Like how bad was Mr. Drummond as an on-air parent? Like what's happening there, right?
Oh my gosh. There's so, like that is the most... across the board, messed up cast. One of my favorite, like, side Different Strokes stories is Gary Coleman. I'm obsessed with Gary Coleman, or was, because there's something so bizarre about him. I remember, like, watching him on Sally Jesse Raphael dressed as a train conductor. This is, like, post-Different Strokes, you know, talking about his love of trains. And as a kid...
He dressed as a conductor?
Oh, yes. Like,
as a teenager?
Like, older than a teenager, I think, because I feel like he was, like, 20 on that show, or no, he was, like, you know, not that old. But there was something that I remember, like... You know, certain things get burnt into your head, and you don't know why. And I just think of my childlike brain was like, this is wrong. I don't know why it's wrong, but I know this is wrong. Mm-hmm. And just think of a man or a teenager dressed as a train conductor on Sally Jesse Raphael actively talking about trains. And he's not – this is way after the show has been over.
He's not promoting anything. He's just on I Love Trains.
That was it. And so – years later, I had watched this Arsenio Hall clip, and again – burnt into my head. And he's talking about, he's like, oh, I got a new look now. I got a new look. He's like, oh, you look styling. And he goes, yeah, this is my outfit to get the ladies. And then Arsenio's asking him a bunch of questions. And he's like, do you get a lot of ladies, Gary, during Different Strokes? And he's like, well, no, Arsenio, I couldn't because AIDS was out. And women didn't want to come out and have sex during AIDS. So I had to, like, it took me a while before I could get in there. And I remember, like, this talk of AIDS being the thing that cut into Gary Coleman's game. And I'd always been obsessed with this story. And, you know, and there's, like, quotes in this thing where he's like, you know, he's like, who are you dating right now? He's like, well, I can't say names because there are quite a few. You know, like, really coy and sexual. And then the AIDS. So I was always obsessed with that. And as a matter of fact, that made me do this thing I did called Arsenio Paul, where I recreated Arsenio Hall.
What did you do?
I recreated Arsenio Paul. I recreated my favorite episodes of Arsenio Hall. And we did them improvised and verbatim. So I had Seth Rogen playing Gary Coleman in that one. I dug that one up. And you can see them all on YouTube.
So what are some of the other classic Arsenio? The fact that you've analyzed the classic episodes of Arsenio.
The ones that I could find. Well, the one that I never was able to do was Ike Turner. Ike Turner was amazing because Ike Turner's on there. And he's like, no, they found cocaine in your house. And you've been arrested 5 times for cocaine. And he's like, all right, let me tell you. 3 of those times, yes. The other 2, no. And it was like actively defending how, like, yes, 3 times yeah, I did have times, it. Yeah. Well, the other time it was my son. And you know, and then, like, I think Arsenio was trying to do a little bit of a harder-hitting interview. He's like, you know, in Tina Turner's book, she says, you hit her. And he was like, yeah, the bitch deserved to be hit. Like,
he said that.
Yes, is he back on that, in that level? And that's what I was so fascinated by with Arsenio. Is he want, like, he, there's no publicist, or there was no, like, I feel like,
right.
You know, like, you weren't watching it the next day, there was no internet, like, you could say it, and if you didn't see it, it never happened.
It disappears.
Like, Halle Berry is, like, ridiculing the person who came in first place in a beauty contest that she lost. He's like, now she's divorced and living in a trailer. I'm like, honey, hold on, you're Halle Berry, you're a movie star. Let's not take it easy on the person who came in first place. You're doing fine.
Right,
you need to, like, snipe her.
That could be the biggest moment of her life. Give her that.
Exactly.
You know? Right.
So I kind of found my favorite clips, and that, you know, it's Gary Coleman there. There was one with Madonna and Rosie O'Donnell, where, again, Rosie O'Donnell is talking about the men that she likes. And Madonna's like really pimping her out into that. And then there was Steven Seagal, who clearly seemed like he was having an abusive relationship with his wife. Like, no, your wife wasn't at that premiere. He's like, no, I don't let her come out on rainy nights. It's like, whoa. Like, what is
Kelly
going
on? LeBrock? Was he
yeah, Kelly LeBrock at that
You're
point.
Mistreating Kelly LeBrock? We must destroy him.
There are so many bizarre things. Like, he interviewed NWA, and they were in, like, hockey masks. Like, he did so much crazy stuff. Like, Tupac Shakur talking about why everyone should smoke weed and not do cocaine. Like, so we recreated all of those. And then to circle back to Gary Coleman, the thing that was so fascinating by that Gary Coleman thing stuck in my head was, years later, right before he died, it came out he was a virgin until he got married, which was, and this was probably 2013, 2014, and that Arsenio clip was in the early 90s. So, like, it's crazy to be, like, I'm always fascinated, like, wow, what, he's such a fascinating character because he was, like, America's kid, but then he had this, you know, growth thing where he wasn't bigger, so he was always viewed as a kid, but then he is like playing with trains, and now he's then trying to up his image and be like, yeah, no, I f- a lot of girls, but then it's like he doesn't, and his reasons for not having sex were bizarre. Like, so it was like, yeah. I'm fascinated by Gary Coleman.
I remember to Arsenio, and to think back, if you don't know, that show was so popular.
Yeah.
Like, it was the show. It was probably more popular than The Tonight Show.
Well, and because it also was for an audience that wasn't watching The Tonight Show.
Right.
It was like, it was what, I mean, for me, it was like, that's what I wanted to watch. You had Eddie Murphy on, he had NWA on. After the riots, he had the Bloods and the Crips on. Like, he was doing crazy stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I remember he would always have WWE guys on, wrestlers on, but always had to wear their costume.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they'd be on wearing, like, you know, spandex shorts and, like, you know, ribbons around the arms.
Well,
so
we did. I did the Ultimate Warrior on Arsherio Paul. Yeah, so I had Arsherio. I had Rob Hubel play the Ultimate Warrior.
Played Rob Hubel.
And it's, I mean, that interview is amazing because I almost feel like Ultimate Warrior, and again, RIP, it was not making any, like, because he was like, and Arsenio's trying to interview him, like, and I felt like his character was just fleshed out enough for sound bites, but not for a full interview. Like he was saying some stuff. I was like, this has gone off the rails
the
now.
The stars come from the sky and fall upon the world. And you're
it
like,
was making
yeah,
me
man.
Laugh so hard. I actually got to go on the new Arsenio as the old Arsenio. So I went dressed up as Arsherio, and he interviewed me, and he didn't even understand what was going on. So I am on his new couch dressed as him. We are doing it. It was one of my favorite moments.
Did you do an impersonation?
I mean, an impersonation, not really. Like, it's just me dressed. It's like, I wouldn't be like, hey, here's my impression of it. Like, it just is like, I think all together, it's like a lot of just like nodding the head and a lot of yes, yes. All right, now tell me about this. It's like, yeah, exactly.
I remember that. And the dog pound. That was
the
easy.
Oh, the dog pound. It's so, like, there's so much. I mean, yeah, but that show had so many. As everybody hit injury, Jason Voorhees, the killer from Friday the 13th, who just never spoke and just raised the knife when Arsenio asked too many crazy questions. But
at least, like, he was trying, right?
Oh, yeah.
I remember Nelson was on at the beginning of the show. He lit the guitar on fire like Hendrix, but he had a big blonde wig on.
Oh,
so he was doing the Hendrix bit with the fire coming up, but with the blonde wig on because Nelson was coming on.
Yeah.
It was very strange with the black man with the blonde wig lighting for Nelson, you know?
Oh, he that's so funny.
Give all those things a try.
Well, it's like, I feel like, again, it was, you know, now there's so many talk shows, but that was the one that was, it just captured an audience that was just different, and I think really supported people that you wouldn't see on talk shows, like Jean-Claude Van Damme, like, was no one really in when he first started doing appearances. It was sort of like, he's a second-tier talk show, so you get all these quote-unquote, like, second-tier guests, but those are the ones that kind of became these way bigger celebrities.
They had their chance, so they became big. Did you ever see the SNL bit, the Arsenio Venkman show?
Oh, wait, what was
Rob Lowe was Arsenio.
Oh, no.
And, you know, Arsenio had really long fingers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they gave Rob, like, these really long hands. It was actually a pretty good bit, you know. Are you an SNL fan as well?
I am, yeah, for sure.
From, like, what eras?
I guess, like, I feel pretty versed until... I started off Nick at Night, so I was very much in Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd, but then my core cast was probably Sandler, Farley, Spade, like that grouping,
that
Chris
gang,
Rock,
yeah.
And then, you know, I've watched until now, you know, but it's, but that, the one that I also love is the Eddie Murphy years, even though it's not a Lorne Michaels thing. I loved Eddie Murphy as a kid. I was
He's
the best. So I always used to watch for him. Him and Billy Crystal and all those.
That was great when they brought in Crystal, Martin Short.
Yeah, those guys. That was a great year, whatever it was. Like, yeah.
1 year of.
Yeah.
It seemed, you seem like the type of guy that would try an audition for SNL. Did you ever try? I did.
I auditioned 4 times for SNL, which is really crazy.
Are you from New York?
I am from New York.
Okay.
So I was with the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater, which is Amy Poehler, Matt Besser, Matt Walsh, and Ian Roberts. And we were there, and Lorne Michaels had his first like ever SNL like showcase show. And so they asked me to come in after that. And you got to audition on the main stage at 8H. You're in that center spot, and it is one of the craziest things. I realized the other day I auditioned with Kevin Hart. My first time I auditioned, it was me, Kevin Hart, and Amy Poehler in 3 dressing rooms right next to each other.
Wow.
Because they bring you in and they treat you like a cast member. You come in, it was so cool to me. So you come in, they put you in a cast member's dressing room, and then they let you sit for a long time. Like, I think I got there at 3 and I didn't audition until like 8, you know, and you're in that room, and what you learn, because it's sort of a sociological experiment, I think, you're in that room and there's a TV there. And you put on TV, and TV is like an NBC, it's in 30 Rock. So you can watch what's going on the news, you can watch, you know, whatever it is, because they have a lot of live feeds. But if you keep on flipping around the channel, you'll get to the SNL main stage auditions. So you could start to watch other people. Now the question is, do you psych yourself out? Are you watching? So I remember, like, and you know, it's running live. Anyone in the building could be watching the SNL auditions.
Wow.
So that was like a crazy thing, and just knowing that you had the power to watch anybody else. But at that point, is it too late to change it? What do you do? You know, and then you get brought down, and similarly to the exiting the bathroom with no eye contact or the best week ever way, the same way, like, they bring you down into, if you've ever watched SNL, like, they kind of go out into that a receptionist area, you know, like, so then you're in that hallway, and you're just looking at the walls full of every, like, cast and all these
pictures. Of every host, I think, is on the wall in a frame.
Yes, exactly.
Everybody.
And it's like, and you're in it, and anyone who watches SNL, it's like the most hallowed hallway. Yes. It's awesome, you know. And I think all of it is serving to psych you out and psych you up, you know, because it's like the stakes are just continually being raised. Like, you know, you're in a cast dressing room, then you're in the hallway, and then they walk you into the 8H stage, and it's completely dark. And I had a very nice experience with Lorne Michaels. Like, I got up on the home base, and they're miking you, and, you know, there's all the cameras there. And the only thing that was different for me was there was no chairs. So it was just the stage, the band, no band, but, like, the band area.
The band would play.
Yeah, and you're there, and he came up, and he was like, you know, do you need anything? Do you have any questions? And I said, no. And he said, all right, great. And, yeah. And I actually said, I was like, you know, kind of a table to put my stuff down on my props, you know. And he was like, oh, yes. And he got mad. He's like, Michael, get this guy. Get him a prop. I'm like, oh, you know. And then you get it, and then you stand on 8H. You stand on the stage, and they count you down. Like, the director's there, and they're going to count you down. So it's like 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The red lights and the cameras go on. And the director is like holding up his fingers in the air, waiting, because then your name comes on the screen, the date comes on the screen, and then it's like, point at you and go. So it's like, you are essentially doing live television for your audition. And it again, it's there to psych you out. When that red light turns and you go in, are you going to be able to do the job? And that was, to me, the coolest thing about the audition process. It was just like, I got to perform. You know, I didn't get to be on SNL, but I got to be on that stage. And then I was brought back the following year, and they did a crazier way of doing an audition the following year. They brought everybody together, and they said, improvise together, which is, you know, SNL is all about trying to be the singular person that gets picked out. Now you're in a group of 8 people, all who want that same slot, all dudes. There was no women. And it was hard. I had, like, a lot. And then, you know, so I went a few times. I'm thankful I never got that, because I got to do my own sketch show. But it was like, you know, and I think SNL, you got to really put in your time. Whereas,
well, when you're doing an audition, though, how much time do you get?
You know, it's pretty loose. It's not like the way that it was presented to me was three and three. You know, three characters, three impressions. But if you're really good at impressions, do eight impressions and two characters. You know, I think what they want to do is see you. And again, with a lot of things, too, you know, I think as I've gotten more and more into this business, you realize it has very little to do with what you're doing in the moment. And it's more about, like, a very general sense of a lot of things. It's like, okay, he looks roughly the right way. You know, and if you're not f***ing up, if you're not, like, falling off the stage, you know, and you're not terrible,
yeah.
Like, you exist in this weird middle ground where it's just sort of like, right, well, we have a fat guy. Oh, well, we have this guy. You know, like, what?
We need a black guy.
Yeah,
a Spanish
exactly.
Guy,
whatever, right.
Yeah.
So you're just like, you get, so like, you know, now as I get older, I'm like, there's a freedom in knowing that. But it's also, you know, it's just like, what? I know that. I had a friend who worked with Lauren Michaels, and actually now I've met a few people, and I did make it very close to the end. Like, I think it was down between me and someone else, and it was, and the way it was presented to me, and I remember the story so clear, is like, we were like, who do we go? Who do we get? Like, you know, Lauren's like, who do you think? Who do you think? And there was a pretty evenly split. No one could kind of figure out the right...
Between Shear and the other
guy. Yeah, and the other guy. And he was, like, really wrestling with it. And it was a one night at dinner, apropos of nothing. They're all sitting around. And like, we'll hire him. We'll hire the other guy. You know, and that was it. And that
just
was...
On his instinct?
On his instinct in the middle of a dinner that had they were not talking about. And that's how easy it kind of came and went. And my last time I auditioned for SNL was more of a mic. It was my birthday. And I was... called in, come meet Lauren. He's our nosy, but come and talk to him. Get there at like 3, and they go, Lauren's running 8 hours behind. Like, 8 hours. And they're like, go, why don't you? I go, well, can I go home? I lived on 50th and 8th, and this is a 30 Rock, is like 49th Street. I'm like, I could be home, and I could come back in 5 hours. Like, yeah, you know, I could still wait 3 hours. Like, no, he wants you to wait in the building. It was my birthday, too. So I'm waiting in the building until like 11:30, you know, and it was a fun
day. Do you think
day.
That was another mindful semester?
I don't think, I don't know if it's intentional. I think it's like everything runs on Lauren's clock. It's his show, and he'll get to you when he's going to get to you, but it's not a minute before, and he's not worried that you're there.
Right.
And everyone is worried that you are, that... If you're not, like, he could go at one point, like, the same way he was at that dinner and going, we'll pick that other guy. He could go, oh, let's meet with Paul right now. And they have to be ready on a moment's notice.
Yeah,
and I think that's the type of person he is. So I don't think that he is in any way a bad guy. I think he's just sort of, like, on his whim, what he wants, when he wants it, and you have to be ready for it. And I think good bosses, not good bosses, but I think... You know, some bosses are just not it. You know, that's the way it runs, and that was it. So I was there until like 11, and sat down in his office with him, talked to him for like 20 minutes, and he was like, "Let's come back tomorrow night and hang out with us." That was Friday, and it was going to be Saturday. So I went to SNL on Saturday night, got treated really well, hung out with the writers, went on the stage, rode in a limo to the after party. They're like, "What do you think about the show?" I'm like, "I think this, I think that, great, great, great." And then at the after party, I got bought this really I'm forgetting right now, but it's like Johnny Walker, like blue, I guess, is like the really expensive. I remember that because I was like, oh, I couldn't afford that, as you know, in New York. I was poor as shit. And I got this Johnny Walker blue, and I was feeling, well, maybe working at SNL is going to be pretty crazy. And one of the producers came up to me in the middle of the party and goes, hey, we decided not to hire you. And that was it in the middle of the party. And that was me.
You'd think after 4 auditions and all this kind of cow time, they'd at least give you a shot.
Yeah.
A featured player or something.
Yeah. Well, you know, but it was... And like I said, it worked out for the best for me, because then if I got on SNL, I'm sure... Who knows what my experience would have been, you know? But I know that because I didn't, I got to go meet up with Aziz and Rob, and we got to make our show.
Giant.
Yeah. And that, I think, has given me more than... SNL could have, just because I got to start making my own stuff, and I think that's become like a bigger narrative in my career. And also, honestly, I feel like I fully cooked a little bit more in New York. Like, you got to perform more. Like, it's like in SNL, you could pluck you, and then that's it. Your formative years are kind of stopped because you're just sort of, now I'm over here. Whereas I got to perform like 5-6 nights a week, every week, and really do a bunch. You basically go to graduate school for acting and comedy, and be surrounded by all these amazing people.
I did a SNL movie called MacGruber. And
one of the best.
Yeah, it's just so ridiculous. Met Lauren on set, and I couldn't believe how much she sounded like Dr. Evil.
I always said, like, I never had a Lauren impression until I met him. And then when you meet him, it's instant. Like, you're like, oh, here it is. Like, it's ready to go.
It's like, that is so Dr. Evil. But he doesn't want anybody, he doesn't like that.
No, of course not. Yeah. But he's got such a, you know, distinctive voice. And, you know, it's like very, like,
we decided not to hire you in like, the middle of the party.
My biggest fun up with him was, like, he said to me, he's like, so, do you have any questions for me? And I said, you know, after this 20-minute-long interview, and I was like, no, not really. And he goes, really? 30 years in TV and you don't have a question? And I was like, everyone was like, don't ask him questions. Don't do this. Don't put him on the spot. Meanwhile, I was like, yeah, I could keep you talking your ear off all night if I wanted to. And he was like, of course you could. Okay, great. You know, but he's like, and I do think, like, he is a guy who is a champion of talent. He's definitely found amazing talent continually and an interesting guy. But, wow, MacGruber, that's a great distinction because that's I think that's one of the best SNL movies. If, like, that and Wayne's World, to me, are... But MacGruber is one that I think is an underrated one, though, too.
It's funny. I was actually literally thinking in my head for the last 5 minutes, we got to talk about SNL movies, and you bring it up.
Yeah.
But I think MacGruber, and it's funny because Yorma Taccone, who is the director, he called it when we were on set. He said, this will not be a hit in the theaters. It'll be a hit for years to come as a cult movie.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where it's gone. He was right because I think it did like $4 million box office first
week. I think the problem with that movie... It has nothing to do with the movie. It had to do with SNL. Because it came after years of Superstar and It's Pat and Ladies Man and, you know, and the between Wayne's and, you know, even Stuart Stavis' family. Like, from Wayne's World to that, there was a sea. Night at the Roxbury. Like, all these
like a
movies.
Mango movie or something.
Yeah, there's all this.
Chipmunk guy or whatever.
Yeah, was there? And it's like, so it's like there's all these shitty movies. And when you heard it was an SNL movie, you just assumed it was shitty. And I've heard that Stuart Stavis' Family is really funny. And I've heard that Superstar, is really good. But it's like, it was just branded as shit.
Right, you don't even want to see it because you know the track record is so awful.
And I think MacGruber had the double hit of, that's a dumb way to make a movie because MacGruber was so stupid but short on the show and so great. But like to go like, they're making that into a movie?
Yeah.
And it's so not that. It's the smartest version of it. It's so funny. But I feel like that's why no one even went to go see it. I feel like it was people like no to SNL and no to that idea. It was like, but without any thought of what it actually was.
It was done before it even started.
Exactly.
Of the group that it was paired in.
And now, meanwhile, if that was never existed on SNL and it was a thing, I think it would have been a bigger hit. It's a really funny movie.
You mentioned some really bad movies, and that's actually what your podcast, How Did This Get Made, focuses on bad movies. One of my favorite podcasts out there. And I want to know how you came up with the movies you talk about and what are some of the worst movies you've had to watch as a result of your podcast. But before you answer that, let me give a quick shout out, Paul, to TrueCar and the TrueCar app. I wouldn't have my killer new 2016 Cadillac Escalade without TrueCar, or maybe I would have it, but I would have spent thousands more on it than I did, and I would have spent hours more in the dealership. TrueCar and the TrueCar app not only saved me about $3,000 on the Escalade, it also saved me hours of my life. Like I said, I was in and out of the dealership, you know how long? 90 minutes. If you think that's some kind of a catchphrase, it's not. In and out of the dealership with a brand new 2016 Cadillac Escalade in about 90 minutes. It was that fast and that easy. TrueCar and the TrueCar app can do the same for you, and they can help you even if you're looking for a used vehicle. Over 500,000 pre-ordered vehicles available from TrueCar certified dealers nationwide. So whether you're looking for a brand new car or a gently used car, you can get upfront pricing information from TrueCar so you can enjoy a better buying experience. Using TrueCar and the TrueCar app lets you see what other people paid for the car you want so you can determine a fair price and feel confident when you buy your car, okay? TrueCar connects you with the local local certified dealer of your choosing who will honor your guaranteed savings, which makes your car buying process quicker and easier, right? True Car users save, get this, an average of $3,279 off MSRP. Let me say that, $3,279 off MSRP. That's the average. I didn't save quite that much, but it was very, very close. And got in and out of the dealership in 90 minutes. And over 2 million cars have been sold to True Car users by the True Car Certified Dealer Network. All right? That's a lot of cars. And don't worry about finding a certified dealer. There's over 11,000 in True Car's extended network. So when you're ready to buy a new or used vehicle, visit TrueCar.com or download the True Car app to enjoy a better car buying experience. I know I did. Listen, this is the way to buy a car. Trust me. Trust True Car. You'll save money. You'll save time. It is the easiest way to buy a car in 2016. That's what I did. So you got to try it. Remember, some features not available in all states. TrueCar.com. Get the best car available for the cheapest price in the fastest time. Do it now. TrueCar.com.
It's your last chance to get great holiday savings at Guitar Center. Like a Yamaha portable keyboard, only $79. Add a month of lessons for only $99. Plus, the newest and hottest guitars, drums, keys, and more. Exclusive gear you can't get anywhere else. Special financing and gift cards. The perfect present for every musician. So hurry in and find your sound at Guitar Center. Lessons available at select locations only.
You mentioned some really bad movies, and I'm actually a fan of your podcast.
Oh, yeah.
How did this get made?
Yeah, yeah.
A friend of mine told me about it a couple months ago, and I finally checked it out. I mean, it's a great idea. You talk about
just
really bad movies, and you watch them.
Yeah.
You kind of pull a Mystery Science Theater. And
yeah, we just kind of talk about these movies, kind of unpack them. And the way we always kind of view it is, we always have like on one of our friends, me, Jason, and June, my wife, and
oh, that's your wife.
That's my wife.
Oh,
yeah,
cool. That's cool.
So, and we, it started very casually as just these are my friends that we go see movies with, and you when you see something bad, you have to talk about it. It's the same way you talk about something that's good, but like it just became like a fun way to kind of look at these movies and go, what happened? And you know, three of us are all writers and producers, and some of us are directors, and you know, so we're all actors. So
yeah,
we've all been on multiple sides of this coin, and I think can have empathy for, like, oh gosh, what went wrong here, and how did this happen? Like, you know, it becomes a real question of like, what is going on? And the thing that I kind of like how the show is kind of grown is we treat the characters like real people. Like, why would that character ever do that? Like, you know, it's like,
yes,
it's less about like the acting and the directing. It's much more about like plot points, like what is going on, and trying to unpack that.
Interesting, diverse, intricate discussions. Like I'm the first one I listened to is Sleepaway Camp, one of my all-time favorites.
Yeah. Oh,
when you guys were kind of going through like the sexuality of the parents, and is this a gay guy waiting at the dock for the dad, and I was like, man, you guys are spending a lot of time on this, and it was starting to freak me out, because I'm trying to, where are they at?
That's the kind of the beauty of the show. Like, well, sometimes it's like, spend like 20 minutes on a scene. Like, that was like the first scene of the movie. It has nothing to do with anything else. But it's like, there was a thing in the movie Judge Dredd with Stallone where, like, Rob Schneider hides in a robot. And when they open up the robot, it was a garbage robot, but we couldn't tell if it was running on food or if it was like food in like a spaghetti robot. We just couldn't. I love getting caught up in those like dumb discussions. It's just sometimes it becomes the most fun.
How do you choose the movies that you do?
You know, I do a lot of, early on I did a lot of the picking of it and try to do it. Now I have these two interns, researchers who help me, because the line that you walk is it bad or is it good bad? And there's a difference. Like, when it's bad, it's not really that fun to talk about. And it's like, you want to find something that is engaging or has things that are going to be worthy of conversation.
Yes.
And, you know, I think a great example of it is, for us, like, Last Airbender was a movie that I think we genuinely thought, this is a bad movie, but it's not horribly acted, it's not horribly directed, it's just a bad movie. And there's nothing fun about, like, just a bad movie. I want it to be like Tom Selleck fighting robots against, you know,
Gene Simmons.
Yeah. Like, that's what I want, you know. It's like, and it just becomes a way more interesting conversation, you know.
Poor Tom Selleck, he never got the movie.
No,
you know, he was in a couple and he just never made it work.
To think, like, he could have been Indiana Jones.
Is that true?
That was the whole thing. He couldn't get out of Magnum. you know?
Wow.
And Pierce Brosnan at the time couldn't get out of Remington Steele to be James Bond.
You're kidding.
And then he came back many years later, but it was like, but those were like those weird contracts where it's just like, wow, what would it have, what, you know, if Pierce Brosnan was James Bond instead of Timothy Dalton, would the franchise would have been invigorated? I think it would have probably been invigorated.
I think
he would have,
so.
You know, but well, I think...
Remington Steele was James Bond, basically.
Yeah, and I think that... and I feel like Timothy Dalton, while I like him, he's probably the most unmemorable Bond to me.
Yeah, the most boring, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, and so it's like... It's a weird. It's weird. It's just like, you know. It's how the twist of fate.
Think of those things, because I remember actually. You can see some clips of him in Back to the Future. Eric Stoltz is the original Marty McFly,
and that to me feels like that's a movie that is not good. Like that.
Back to the Future. That,
well, no, with Eric Stoltz.
Oh yeah.
Like
You
know, but with Michael J. Fox, it's a classic that will forever live.
And that's what made it, because of his performance.
It's so
great.
And, you know, when I read stuff about... I just was reading an article about the Eric Stoltz as Marty McFly. It's like, they were like, it's not... He's not doing a bad job. He's just not being funny either. Like, you know, and it's like... And I think he was treating it like a drama. He was method. And he would make people call him Marty on set.
Oh,
really, like, crazy. And, so it's funny, though. But would Indiana Jones be Indiana Jones if it wasn't Harrison Ford, if it was Tom Selleck? I don't know.
Would he have kept the mustache?
I mean, yeah. Look, I mean, it's so, like, you just don't know how, you know, what the right part is for the right person at the right time. And it's a huge thing, or, you know, or it's not, you know?
How bad would that be if this has ever happened to you, like with Eric? I think they actually shot for a couple weeks, and then
shot
he gets
for a long
fired.
Time.
Like, oh, that'd be so bad, right?
They have so much footage of him as Marty McFly. It's like they shot the Twin Pines parking lot. They shot stuff with the mom. They shot a lot of stuff with him. And I think they were like 3 weeks into production, or 3 or 4 weeks into production, and I just read this article on Vulture website, and it's just like a very disheartening thing. It's like, we had to fire him, and we knew that Michael J. Fox was waiting in the wings, and you know, Michael J. Fox was pulling like double duty, working on Family Ties and this simultaneously.
I think it was like Family Ties during the day, straight to the set.
Yeah,
you know, in Santa Monica.
Probably doing cocaine, you know, in
the 80s.
Yeah, the 80s, and
drinking
and
water, cocaine.
Yeah,
what you did.
And I feel like, you know, but it's such a kind of oddly iconic performance. But then you look at like Michael J. Fox, who I think is one of the funniest like sitcom actor, like multicam. I saw him when he did Spin City. They shot in New York, and I went to go see a taping of Spin City, and I remember going like, holy shit, he is like gifted on another level of working that medium. It was like unbelievable. Like, no one was just pitch perfect in every little detail, and I think he's amazing in Back to the Future, but he never really had a like fully fledged movie career. I mean, he made like Light of Day and My Secret of My Success, but it wasn't like Teen Wolf, but it's like... It was like he should have been a bigger star. He's in arguably one of the biggest movies of all time.
Absolutely, and a huge, huge hit.
Yeah.
So why didn't that continue? Maybe was there a dramatic side that he didn't have? Maybe.
Who knows? Because it's like, but you could certainly, people who are comedic, you know, he did all that shit on Family Ties, but it's like maybe it's the time of the launch too. It's like now it's much more acceptable to have somebody go from movies to TV and TV to movies.
Right.
There's no thing, but maybe back then it was like he's a TV star, and that's
maybe,
I don't know.
That's
or
where
he just
got
picked,
guys from,
or
you know?
He picked three shitty movies and then didn't work. Whereas George Clooney kind of picked three shitty movies, like The Peacemaker, Batman and Robin, and something else I remember like early on.
Yeah.
Like maybe like One Fine Day or something. And you know, and not that they were shitty, but they were not big. And then he was allowed like a fourth and a fifth that became like Three Kings, and then something else that was awesome, and then he's George Clooney. But like it just seemed like, and Michael J. Fox, I mean, I guess Teen Wolf isn't a hit, even though it seems like a hit to me.
It's more of a legendary thing, but maybe box office wise I don't think it was much of a hit, you know. But
and that came out before Back to the Future,
right?
So crazy.
But isn't Johnny Depp kind of the same at this point in time? Like, when's the last blockbuster that Johnny Depp had?
Well, I mean, Johnny Depp, once he kind of, I know people like give him shit for like, I don't know if selling his soul, but like when he did like the Johnny Depp as Pirates of the Caribbean, Jack Sparrow is like a multi-billion dollar franchise.
Iconic,
but then, but it's so funny to think of like the Johnny Depp that I kind of was in college with was
Jim Jarmusch's Dead Man and these movies that you had to go to Andy Gilbert Grape. Like these, like he wasn't doing the big movies, and now like with Willy Wonka and kind of those, like it's like he's not doing like what people I think accuse Eddie Murphy of doing, like taking these kids' movies and doing the paycheck.
Right.
But it's like it was fun to see him in Black Mass, even though I didn't really particularly care for Black Mass. I was like, he's always great. He's been great in Jack Sparrow. Like it's a fun, yes. Like he's always good. But it's weird. It's like you just don't know. Like I want to see him do more because it's like he did that, the mustache Mordecai and the tourist, and it's like, oh, this is
but that's
weird.
He's got a lot of those, and then the huge blockbuster of Lone Ranger and Tonto.
Oh, yeah, right.
I just forgot dies, about that. And he was great in that.
Yeah, I think that he always is doing something interesting. But you know, it's weird. I think it's a weird middle ground to find an actor who is as talented as he is, because I think he is, with good sense of like what a movie should be. Because I have a feeling he's looking at it purely from characters, and he's like, "Ooh, I want to play that character." Is that a good movie? He may not know. And is he doing? He could be doing a great job in a shitty movie. It just doesn't make a difference.
Yeah.
It's like if you're not in. But Lone Ranger was like real.
Like I think if he would have been the Lone Ranger,
yeah,
people would have went to it.
Yeah.
But he would never want to play the Lone Ranger. He wants to play Tonto.
Yeah, which
you
is
know,
crazy.
It's messed up makeup, and he looked great, and he was so great.
Yeah.
But he's not the Lone Ranger, so
yeah,
that kind of derailed it.
It's weird. It's a very like I don't know. It's a, you know. I think it's if there was a formula for figuring it out, it's like it's just hard. I think everything they've ever worked on, you don't think it's going to be bad. Well, you know, I would say at least 90% of the time. Like you look like when you're there, you're like, this is going to be good. Oh, this is going to be cool. And then sometimes you're there and you're like, oh, this is going to be shitty. But I would say most of the time, everyone thinks they're working on something that's going to be pretty good.
Right. They'll fix it in the edit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or it's like, well, I don't know how that will work, but that I think this is going to be good. And yeah, you just don't know. And I think when you become that big, maybe you're skewed about what people want to see or how people want to be perceived. I don't know.
So you're talking about bad movies with how did this get made? What are the worst?
To me, it's interesting because there's like categories. Like Sleepaway Camp is in a category which is amazing to me because it is so next level crazy. I mean, it is, but it's also like there's no shame on them in Sleepaway Camp because it's like they tried to make their best movie and that's what they got. And there's and I think a movie like Gymkhana falls into that. I don't know if you ever saw Gymkhana. It's like a
Who was the star of that?
A Olympian. Olympian, yeah. like gymnastics.
Yeah.
And so it was like, we're going to make a karate movie, but instead of karate, the guy does gymnastics. So like the guy's running around this like Middle Eastern town finding like reasons to do gymnastics. Like, you know, like a sawhorse is all of a sudden in the town square. Like, you know, so like those are movies that I'm like obsessed with. Like, you know, that, and that's one side of it. But then there are movies on the other side that have all the money, all the time. Like the Batman and Robin and with George Clooney and Chris O'Donnell and
Schwarzenegger's in that too, right?
Oh yeah, Mr. Freeze, yeah. And then there's like even more recently the Green Lantern movie, like with Ryan Reynolds.
Oh yeah.
That movie to me is a perfect example of, I think Ryan Reynolds is doing a great job doing it, but they're trying to please too many people. It's like, I call them like, and I didn't come up with this term, but it's a term like a four quadrant movie. It's like, if you can bring your grandparents, you can bring your kids, you can bring your wife, you can bring your, you know, you can bring you, every quadrant is accounted for, men, right, women, old, young. It's like, and whenever you try to do that, it's a mess because it's like, you're not making a movie for anyone. You're making a movie for everyone.
All things, all people. Which
exactly.
Is a cluster. Yeah.
And the only people who can really do that well is Pixar. You know, there's
once
very
in a while,
few.
The Guardians of the Galaxy squeaks through, right?
Exactly. Like, yeah. Right. There are these small holes that, like, and then when they're there, you're like, oh, that's, you know, Spielberg, I think, for years had that thing. Like, boom, that, you know, it worked. And it's, you know, so, like, those are, I think that's what people try to achieve. And if done, it's great. But if, you know,
very,
but you have
rare
to be, yeah, it's rare. It's yeah, I think the example is not that. You know, it's like, especially lately, you know, I mean, I think the Avengers makes a lot of money and all that sort of stuff. And Fast and Furious is like the big movie, but I still feel like there are different audiences in a way. You know, it's like, but like, you know, like a Pixar movie, you could bring literally the entire family to like Inside Out and everyone will be crying for different reasons,
right,
you know,
right,
at different times. But yeah, but no, I mean, those are the movies that I love too.
What were your favorite ones when you were growing up?
for me, like Ghostbusters is like a my favorite like
so
movie.
Good. It's so, you know what's good. Funny about Ghostbusters? I just watched it with my kids the other day, and you'll watch it with yours. They are smoking.
Oh yeah, right.
Like Venkman, what was it? Ackroyd's name?
Is Stance.
Stance is fixing his car with a cigarette in his mouth. Like, not a good idea, Stance.
No, it's like they're smoking. There's ghost blowjobs in it. Like, and that's a PG movie. Yeah. Like, you know. And but it's funny. Like, I feel like you got to do so much crazier shit. Like, again, Back to the Future, one of my favorite all-time movies. And that movie is like, you have Libyans like firing, like this guy hanging out with like this young kid hanging out with this old man in a parking lot. Like, there's some weird things there that would not get through. And like the even the incesty stuff that's
mom's
going
got
on.
A crush on you and grabs your, you know, grabs your cock and everything.
Yeah, it's like really bizarre. And like Biff kind of raping her in the car. Yeah. Like, it's
good point.
You know, and that's a PG movie. It's like that's. You know, and I think, you know, I think we've, like, sanitized too much stuff because it's, like, I feel like that didn't affect me in a negative way. Like, mm-hmm. it just, you know, but it was, but, yeah, like, those are the movies that I grew up on, like, Uncle Buck and, like, you know, I love, but there are some really messed up things in all those movies that you're, like, you know, Uncle Buck smokes, too. Uncle Buck, like, drives with, like, a handle on the steering wheel so he doesn't have to use both hands and, you know, like, chases after a kid who tried to have sex with his, like, niece. It's, like, it's a pretty, like, crazy
How about Bad News Bears?
Oh, Bad News Bears
example.
Is, like, Bad News Bears is really, like, wow, like that was a kid's movie? How is that a kid's movie?
And we watched it as kids. I must have seen it 10 times by the time I was 10 years old.
Well, that's it. It's like they're like we've become like more puritanical, oddly, in society. It's like I do believe it's like that wasn't wrong until we said it was wrong. Like now that movie, I mean, would be R. It would,
well, I mean,
it, you
I mean,
know,
the Matho's drinking while driving with all the kids in the car.
Yeah.
Which bad enough, but they're all sitting on the back of the convertible, like sitting on the rooftop as they're driving. Kid punches his son the guy punches his son on the field.
There's a bunch of racist stuff in there.
Oh, worst line ever that Tanner says. If I said it right now, I'd get thrown off the podcast.
Yeah, right. And it's like, and they have what's his face up in the tree. The kid naked up in the tree. It's like there's so much stuff.
Drinking beer at the end. Hey, we think you suck. See you next year. And they start drinking beer and like, hey, like let's drink beer.
But that like to me, it's like then they try to remake it with Billy Bob.
Oof.
And it was so watered down and
cut the heart right out of it.
Yeah, just like it, because it's like you can't make that movie. So why even try to make that movie? Because what's awesome about that movie is not that he's a curmudgeon. It was like it was inappropriate on every level.
Yeah,
and then he kind of like co-opted these kids, and the kids are kind of Bad News Bears. And it's like it's really crazy.
So what do you think about the new Ghostbusters with all the girls?
Well. I am a huge fan of every one of those women.
Kristen Wiig, Melissa McCarthy.
Melissa McCarthy, Kate McKinnon, who is, I think, a genius on SNL. She's so funny.
Oh, okay.
Leslie Jones, who was on actually The League and is hilariously funny. My friend Neil Casey, who is in the movie as the bad guy in it, or one of the bad guys in it. And he is one of the funniest performers ever. And I think Paul Feig has just created it, you know, this track record of making good stuff. And it's so crazy to me. I feel bad for him because the backlash of that is insane. Like, who gives a shit? Like, if he's making it with women, like, but people are like, you destroyed the thing. It's like, no. Ghostbusters 2 destroyed Ghostbusters.
Exactly.
And,
so bad.
And that was with the original cast.
Right.
You know, and it's like, so let somebody just, no one owns Ghost, it's like funny people hunting ghosts. Fine. It's Ghostbusters by title, but that's all it is. And I'm looking at that not as part of my childhood. It's like, I'm looking at that as like, all right, here's a funny director with a funny writer, with funny performers making a movie. That is, I think now everything has to kind of be like that now. It's like, it's a remake, it's a reboot, it's a this.
Yeah, of course.
Just to get people into the theater or whatever. But it's not, it doesn't wreck my childhood. Ghostbusters is my childhood. I could watch it any day of the week.
Right.
Like, I don't need to watch Paul Feig's, like, the argument. It's like, to relive my childhood. If I want to relive my childhood, I'll watch that. I'm excited as a fan of everyone in it to see what they do, but they're not remaking Ghostbusters.
Yeah. Has there ever been a worse, well, I'm sure there has been, but a worse sequel in Ghostbusters 2? So bad.
It's a real mess. And, you know, I did a movie with Harold Ramis, and He said something to me Year One,
okay.
The Judd Apatow movie with Michael Cera and Jack Black, and he said something that was so good because me and Michael were huge Ghostbusters fans, just love Ghostbusters, and we would. Harold was the type of guy that you didn't have to like pepper with questions. Like he would sit back and tell you stories,
yeah,
and they were great, from Groundhog's Day to Ghostbusters to Stripes and Caddyshack. Like, just sit back, relax, and listen to Harold talk. And he loved telling stories. And so we were talking about Ghostbusters, and he said to me something that I always remember, and I tell this to everybody. He's like, Ghostbusters is a movie about guys trying to start a business, not a movie about ghosts. And I was like, oh, wow, you're totally right. That's the ghost is the business that they're starting. And that's a fun element of the movie.
It's a great point.
But they are guys that are trying to start a small business. They got in over their head. They're running out of money. They're getting successful. How does that affect? You know, and it's like, and that's what was so good. And what we lost in Ghostbusters 2 is it became all about the ghosts. It became a ghost story. And it's like, that's not what people wanted to see. There needs to be a personal story in it.
It's a great point.
You know, and I was like, oh, right. You're a smart guy. Like, that's what it is. And I think it was neither a ghost movie where it was scary about ghosts, too, and it was just kind of like, here are these characters, and there's just more
They're
ghosts.
Yeah. More wackiness.
And I hate a movie where you are the hero at the end. Everyone in the town is like, Ghostbusters, Ghostbusters, and they have to, like, tack on that, oh, yeah, well, after the movie, everyone just thought it was a light show and that these guys defrauded the city. Now they're hated. It's like, yeah. Wait, what?
You can't do that.
No. Right. It's like, come on. Like, and it's sort of like, you can't, like, you to reboot it. It's like a sitcom or something. It's like, I think that was a bad thing. It's like, you're bringing them back down to zero. I guess you have to, but you can't leave on that note and just like under the like basically it's almost like passing like news. It's like, oh yeah, they're at the kids' birthday parties now. It's like, what? Why?
How did that happen? Right. They just saved New York City.
Yeah, this and it's like, oh, it was a light show. This like 60-foot-tall marshmallow man that walked through the city that everyone saw. Like, where is their technology for any? Yeah. You know, it's like, you know, it's just like that kind of stuff. It's like, it makes no sense. But it's like, oh yeah, now they're failures again. It's like,
I hated that about Rocky V, too. I believe it was V, where he's like living in the Bowery and he's broke. Like, you tell me that Rocky Balboa, one of the most well liked champions of all time, someone wouldn't be sponsoring him or personal appearances. He'd be making, you know, 20 grand a shot.
But Rocky, to me, it's interesting because one through four is telling some sort of story, you know, to a certain extent. Then five and the new one are basically like, forget all that. Like, they just kind of really just, they're like every new, like, because five and six are very different. Like, five, like, where they leave you at five, like, he's brain damaged, he's all fucked up, he's fighting in the street. And six, it's like, oh, that never really happened.
And now there's a restaurant.
So, yeah, now he's in Creed, and it's like, he looks like what you're talking about. Now he looks like, oh, that's the Rocky that we would see. The guy owns a restaurant, and he's a former champ, and he's, you know, people want to pose for him, and he'll get back in now to be a coach. It's boom, boom, boom.
It's a Marvel comic movie, so it has to be two a year, because that's what the contract says, or whatever.
Yeah, and it's just like, let's go. And it's like, we're casting before we have a script, we're going, you know, it's like, and, you know, I think Ant-Man is a movie that is like, it's amazing that it turned out good, but in a weird way, I think that those movies kind of benefit from a more collaborative thing. It's like, all right, Edgar Wright worked on that movie, made it awesome, and then had to be taken off, you know, like left.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then Adam McKay got it, and then added a bunch of jokes and made it, like, I think there's elements of that movie that's very Adam McKay. And then Peyton Reed gets in, and he's more of a comic book guy who has, like, an allegiance to all this, and then he puts his thing. So, like, whenever I watch Ant-Man, I'm like, oh, that's three different directors making one movie.
Why was there three different directors on the movie?
Well, Edgar Wright wanted to do Ant-Man before Marvel movies were even big, and it was just, like, a heist movie.
Yeah.
And he got in, and no one will speak to exactly why. If you read a lot on the internet, there's a lot of hypothesizing about it. But I think basically it got to the point where Edgar wanted to make one movie, and Marvel was becoming and is now a bigger entity.
And they're just like,
can you change it? Can you change it? Can you make it this? Can you make it this? Can you tie in these characters? Can you do this? Can you do this? And I think he just didn't want to do that. I think he was like, no, I want to make the Ocean's 11, my Ant-Man heist movie. That's what I want to make, and I want it to exist outside the world of Marvel, within the same world, but they don't have to have a run-in with, you know, different characters and stuff
Right.
And so I think it just got to a point and he left. But I think the reason why the movie's so good and it looks so good is because those animatics are done years before.
He started it, yeah.
Yeah, because it's like he had those animatics before. He only left 6 weeks before they started, even less, I think, before they started shooting. The movie was cast. He cast it. Mm. He did the animatics. He had the script. You know, McKay always is pretty open about saying, like, he just added jokes and just polished what was already great. And then Peyton didn't have that much time to prep either, so it's like everyone's running on something that's already been created, you know. But it's at the end of the day, it works.
That doesn't work too often when you have multiple directors.
Yeah, so. No, I mean, but I think in these bigger movies, it's sort of like it's much more of, I guess, the difference between buying like a shoe from a cobbler versus a shoe from Target. It's like, you know, they're like, you know, you're gonna have your Paul Thomas Andersons who are researching Scientology and making the master and creating this really fine picture of that world, and you're gonna have the guys who are making the Avengers going like, all right, we're already a week behind schedule, yeah, and we haven't even had to start a script yet. You know, it's like there's a great documentary on the Pirates of the Caribbean 2 DVD where they had to start building sets and they had no script. And they're like, all right, well, build this set. I was in Vancouver shooting a movie, and I was talking to one of the guys there, and he was like, we've taken down 3 sets so far because the script keeps on changing, but we need to be working. Mm-hmm. So we're just like, it's weird.
It's the money being spent on that, right?
Yeah. When you have $100 million, it doesn't make
So last question. If you had, if you were on a desert island and you had to choose one franchise, Star Wars or Indiana Jones, what would you choose?
It's interesting because if I'm choosing franchise potential, like it's like my immediate gut goes to Star Wars because I think it's more expansive. There's more stuff to do. Because to me, nothing gets better than Raiders. Like Raiders and Empire, like I think are the shining
jewels. Yeah,
exactly. You know, so you know, so it's sort of like, all right. So what do I want to watch more? And I can rewatch. I probably have rewatched Raiders more than Empire as an adult. But I think I like, or maybe it's just because I'm just hot on Star Wars right now. I'm just kind of feeling like, you know, again, if I'm on an island and I only have it, I'm like, well, at least I got this J.J. Abrams movie, hope.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll muscle through some of those. Because I think there are elements about the prequels, and I've used this with the biggest grain of salt, that are slightly interesting that I would watch that scene or I'd watch that. But the Crystal Skull is pretty awful. That one really knocks it down.
Is it as bad as the prequels?
I think it's definitely on the level, but not, you know, I think when people think of the prequels too, they're really locked into Jar Jar in the first movie. People don't really think about the second and the third movie, and I don't think those two are as bad.
Yeah.
I don't think they are good, but I don't think they're as bad as what
progressively better.
Yes. And I think I remember, I got to watch it again, but I remember the third being like, okay, it's interesting, and the dialogue is shitty and all that sort of stuff. But Crystal Skull was more of a letdown for me than
when he's in the refrigerator and it saves him from a nuclear bomb and the ants pulling people down the hill, and it's just like,
I think
what is going on?
The bad taste that I have in my mouth from Crystal Skull is pretty rough. And I think I really love Raiders. I feel like I don't ever revisit Crusade or Temple of Doom as much as I think of Raiders. Like, as a kid, I think I was much more into Last Crusade. I thought it was so cool. But now I'm like, nah, Raiders is where it's at. Raiders is like the best distillation.
Dark.
Yeah, it's so good. And then Star Wars, I could be like, well, there's first one's pretty great, and the second one's amazing, and the third one has elements that are cool. And so I feel like there's more there to take. But yeah, Indiana Jones, you know, I want it to be great. I want it to, you know, please, like, and that's why when people go like, oh, Chris Pratt should be Indiana Jones, like, no, Chris Pratt should be Guardians of the Galaxy because that's Indiana Jones. I mean, like, he doesn't have to be Indiana Jones.
Right.
He already is Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
Like, just not doing Indiana Jones. Like,
right.
You know, I think that's a problem with all these reboots. It's like, people want people to be that. Like, I'm so psyched. I think Oscar Isaac is going to be the new Han Solo. That's exciting to me. Like, I'm like, yeah, let's
see. What was he in, Oscar?
Oscar, he was in Ex Machina, which is like a great indie movie, and he's been in the movie Llewyn Davis, the Coen Brothers movie. He's like more of a dramatic guy, but he's been in a couple other things too. They're all pretty great.
So it's the same thing as when Harrison Ford got the gig. He's kind of guy up and coming, nothing really major yet.
Yes, it's like he's good. People know he's good, and he's got a lot of personality. Like in Ex Machina, It's great. He plays like this Steve Jobs, kind of a crazier Steve Jobs. When I saw Ex Machina, I was like, I'm excited for Star Wars, because like he's got a fun energy, and that's what you want. Like, you want to find the next people, and he's not going to be Han Solo. He can be something else. Like, and that's what I think is so great about. Sorry, I'm going to give you this big. But
no.
About like C-3PO is like, that's great. Like, it can always be C-3PO, because that's like, he's not aging. He doesn't look weird, you know. And from what I saw of Mark Hamill on set, like with the beard, looking like Obi-Wan Kenobi, I'm like, ooh, cool. Like, that's what I want to see. Like,
full circle.
Age them. Age these people. Give them like cool shit, because that's fulfilling. I went to a charity screening of Empire Strikes Back at the Arclight with Harrison Ford.
And he was
there?
It was
awesome.
Nice. Yeah.
He did a Q&A after, and it was the craziest audience. It was like, it was Sacha Baron Cohen. It was like, I want to say like Justin Bieber. It was like the crazy, like everyone who like you know. And so Harrison Ford did this Q&A, and it was funny because there's been a moment where he started to come back around to Star Wars, and it's sort of like, oh, why do I hate this thing that people love me for? And it's not painted him into a corner. It's like, he's painted himself into a corner of doing a lot of shitty Ford. Yeah. He will always be Harrison Ford, even though he makes shitty movie after shitty movie. And I think he's actually really super talented, but he's not made a good movie in a long time. But but seeing him there, and he was talking about this thing, and this is a couple of years ago, he said, you know, I haven't seen this movie since it came out, The Empire, but I wanted to be prepared for this Q&A. So last night, I watched Star Wars. I wanted to now see Star Wars, and I wanted to watch this. And it, I got hit by this thing, because I'm watching Star Wars. I'm like, holy shit. Right now, I'm as old as Alec Guinness was when he was Obi-Wan Kenobi in Star Wars. And he's like, and that really threw me for a loop. And I was like, oh, wow. Like, so for kids... Like, and I think, you know, I partially feel like you've got to, like, kids have to embrace this too. It's like, they're going to be, like, they're looking at him, and hopefully J.J. Abrams does it right. Like, if he can be, or Luke can be, the Obi-Wan Kenobi, that's way cooler, because I didn't know who Alec Guinness was. I didn't think he was. Like, I was like, oh, he's Obi-Wan Kenobi. I love that guy.
Alex Guinness.
Yeah, right.
It's like,
yeah,
Alex Guinness. Yeah.
It's like, that's, that to me is kind of cool, because I love the new cast, and everyone will love, like, you know, John Boyega and Daisy Ridley and all these people. But like, oh, and those old, that old guy is pretty cool too. But like, our parents knew of Alec Guinness being a great, like, you know, great actor.
Shakespearean actor, Peter Cushing,
yeah, like, you know, but these are just faces to us, you know, and like, so if they can do that, I'm psyched. I mean, but who knows? I mean, I'm nervous. You know, once bitten, twice shy. You know,
my thing was is they. I don't think they would do this if it wasn't going to be good. I don't think JJ would have taken it on if it wasn't going to be kick ass great.
I think he knows what is in store for him, and what he has to do, and what he has to champion. And you know, he said, "I want it. I could never be able to direct Star Wars, so I went and did Star Trek." So he got to make Star Wars his way. And Rian Johnson is the second director of the second movie. Like, I love Rian Johnson. So
he's already been announced.
Yeah, he's been announced. And now Colin Trevorrow, the guy who did Jurassic World, is doing the third one. But again, in that mass-produced way, it's like, you know, where are they at? But Rian Johnson, like, I'm like, really excited, because that makes me excited. What's the second one? Because Rian Johnson only have made really kind of crazy, indie, weird movies. So it'll be interesting.
If they can find a way to fit Gary Coleman in there, we'll be upset.
Ghost of Gary Coleman.
Thanks to Paul Scheer. Great to know that I found another person who loves pop culture, the minutia of pop culture, as much as I do. As if there was any doubt, after being my compadre on I Love the 70s, 80s, 90s, I Love the 2000s, I Love the 2010s. Is that a thing? It should be. Thanks to Paul, and thanks to his amazing podcast, How Did This Get Made? Very, very funny. How Did the Worst Movies of All Time Get Made? He gives rundowns, a scene-by-scene report, almost like a Mystery Science Theater 3000 type of vibe. You'll love the breakdown and analysis of the bad movies. And like Paul said, they're bad movies, not bad movies that are so bad they're good. These are drop dead shit bad movies. All right. Paul's podcast, How Did This Get Made, is on iTunes. Why don't you head over there, subscribe to his podcast, leave him a review and a 5-star rating, and then subscribe to Talk Is Jericho as well, and leave me a 5-star rating and leave me a good review. I'd appreciate that a lot, because I know how much you guys dig podcasts. And I got another one for you. All right, here's add this one to your subscribe list. Huge, huge out of the gate, huge hit. Keeping it 100 with my boy Conan. He's the flagship podcast, the debut podcast on the brand new Jericho Network. He debuted last week. He is one of the hottest podcasts in the world today, right off the bat, right off the get-go. Keeping it 100, ready to drop episode number 2 tomorrow. Every Wednesday for Keeping It 100 at Podcast One on iTunes. You got to check this out. Conan, very controversial, does not have a filter. He says what he feels and feels what he says, okay? You're not going to get any sugarcoating. You're not going to get any political correctness from Conan. Keeping It 100 on the Jericho Network, available on iTunes and Podcast One now. Subscribe to it. You're not going to want to miss it. All those other podcasts you subscribe to, get rid of them. Ditch them. The only podcasts you need to subscribe to, 1, Talk is Jericho, 2, Keeping It 100 with Conan. Go do it now. I'm telling you, you're not going to regret it. Very, very hilarious and very, very controversial. It is real. It is Keeping It 100 on the Jericho Network on Podcast One and iTunes. And don't forget, mark your calendars, March 15th, 2017. It's the biggest podcast ever. When Mick Foley joins Talk is Jericho, the countdown has begun. It's still ticking away, 244 days and counting until the biggest podcast ever. You might have noticed I wasn't on Raw this week. I am taking a week off out in Maui right now. But that's why I was not on Raw, as we inch even closer to the draft next week on SmackDown Live. Will I be on SmackDown? Will I be on Raw? Will I be on NXT? Will I get dumped to Velocity? Who knows? Anything could happen. In the meantime, and in between time, this Saturday on Nickelodeon, Chris Jericho makes his debut appearance on the Thundermans. A lot of people are like, oh, Jericho's fallen so far. He's doing the Thundermans. Hilarious role. I've got the mullet of all mullets. I'm telling you right now, you're not going to miss the Thundermans with Jericho this Saturday on Nickelodeon. I play the dad of Jack Griffo's girlfriend, and I am a hard ass. Okay, I own an MMA gym, and I'm scaring the crap out of Jack, who is a superhero on the Thundermans, but I am stronger and tougher, and I have the best mullet of all time. This Saturday, check it out. I'm very, very excited for you guys to see me continue my acting career on the Thundermans. It's going to be a lot of fun. And I'll see you this Sunday at Madison Square Garden as well. I will be there. Street fight. I'm not sure who it's against, but I will be there. I'll street fight anybody. I don't care who it is. And I thank you guys for being there. Thank you guys for checking out Thundermans. Thank you guys for checking out the Jericho Network with Conan, Keeping It 100. And thank you for being here today with Paul Scheer. Super funny. And thank you once again to all you guys for supporting the great Talk is Jericho sponsors, including DDP Yoga. Go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Get 20% off anything you paddle choose for a limited time, including the brand new collector's edition DVD and Blu-ray of the Resurrection of Jake the Snake documentary, one of the best documentaries I've ever seen in my life. Number 6 best reviewed documentary of all time on Netflix. And of course, thanks to the OG sponsor, Amazon. Easiest way to support this show. Please use my Amazon links anytime you do any online shopping. All my Amazon links are at podcast1.com. Just click on the Killer Deals button in the top right corner of the page, then hit the Talk is Jericho button. I got Amazon links for the USA, the UK, the Canada. Every time you use them, Talk is Jericho Amazon links, Amazon kicks back a small percentage to the show to help us cover production costs and become a Talk is Jericho Amazon warrior. Whatever you buy, take a picture of it, take a screenshot of it, post it on the Twitter at Talk is Jericho. I will retweet you and I'll follow you. What kind of a deal is that? That's a damn good deal, man. Don't forget, no extra fees or hidden charges. Just go to podcast1.com. Click on the Killer Deals button in the top right corner of the page. Then hit the Talk is Jericho button. Thank you so much for listening. Keep listening for the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next. Next Friday, I'll tell you what. You guys want something special? Something you ain't going to hear anywhere else? How about this? It's the reunion. Talk and Shop live in Hawaii, presented by Talk is Jericho. Are you a fan of the defunct podcast Talk and Shop? Do you know what I'm talking about? Because if you do, you know what you can get. If you've never heard of it before, it is the podcast that Carl Anderson, Luke Gallows, and AJ Styles did in Japan. Well, we're bringing it here to Talk is Jericho. It is Talk and Shop live in Hawaii, presented by Talk is Jericho. Me, Luke Gallows, Carl Anderson, AJ Styles, sitting around shooting the breeze. All things wrestling. Not even sure what the conversation what the conversation entails, but you're going to hear AJ. You're going to hear Carl. You're going to hear Luke. You're going to hear Hell Yeah Man. You're going to hear Sour Boy. You're going to hear the Nature Hoot. You're going to hear Redneck 1 and Redneck 2. You're going to hear Uncle Alan. A lot of visitors coming to see us on Talkin' Shop live in Hawaii, presented by Talk is Jericho this Friday. Trust me, you're not going to want to miss it. You want to be a fly on the wall for a bunch of dudes sitting around after the matches and having a couple cocktails, Talkin' Shop? That's what you're going to get this Friday. Don't you dare miss it. One of the most ridiculous, funniest podcasts you're ever going to hear. Talkin' Shop, live in Hawaii, presented by Talk is Jericho this Friday. We'll see you then. Big yeah boy to all of you. Love you guys. We'll see you soon. See you on Friday.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Okay, Kevin, for the grand prize of $1 million, what color is the White House?
I know this.
5 seconds.
Oh, switching to Geico could save you a bunch of money on car insurance?
Okay. Judges? That's true, Kevin. They'll allow it. Congratulations. You're a winner.
Woo!
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
It's your last chance to get great holiday savings at Guitar Center. Like a Yamaha F335 acoustic guitar, just $99. Or get a Luna Soprano ukulele, only $49. Plus, the newest and hottest guitars, drums, keys, and more. Exclusive gear you can't get anywhere else. Special financing. Lessons for the beginner on your list. And gift cards, the perfect present for every musician. So hurry in and find your sound at Guitar Center.
Trump's victory. I'm Ed Donahue with an AP News Minute.
It's always a lot of fun when you win. If you work hard and lose, that's not acceptable.
At the White House, President Trump welcomed Republicans from the House and the Senate who passed a bill overhauling the tax code. The president says the middle class will be seeing the effects of this bill very soon.
The typical family of four earning $75,000 will see an income tax cut of more than $2,000. They're going to have $2,000, and that's, in my opinion, going to be less than the average. You're going to have a lot more than that.
The tax overhaul bill also includes a corporate tax cut.
We have companies pouring back into our country, and that means jobs, and it means really the formation of new, young, beautiful, strong companies.
Democrats have criticized the tax package as a giveaway to corporations and the rich. The tax cuts for businesses are permanent under this tax bill, but reductions for individuals and families will expire after a decade. I'm Ed Donahue.